The Sanctuary Service. Chapter 2. God's Sanctuaries on Earth. It was not long after the giving of the law on Mount Sinai that the Lord told Moses to speak unto the children of Israel that they bring me an offering. Of every man that gives it willingly with his heart you shall take my offering. This offering was to consist of gold, and silver, and brass, and blue, and purple, and scarlet, and fine linen, and goat's hair, and ram's skins dyed red, and badger's skins, and shittim wood, oil for the light, spices for anointing oil, and for sweet incense, onyx stones, and stones to be set in the ephod, and in the breastplate. It was to be used mostly in the construction of the sanctuary, but also for the garments of the priesthood and for the upkeep of the service in general. The building proper. The sanctuary here mentioned was a tent with wooden walls, the roof consisting of four layers of material, the inner being of fine twisted linen, the outer, of ram skins dyed red, and a covering above of badger skins. Exodus 26 verse 14. The building itself was about 15 by 45 feet, on the basis of an 18-inch cubit, situated within an enclosure called the court, which was about 75 feet wide by 150 feet long. The tabernacle was so constructed that it could be taken apart and easily moved. The boards were not nailed together as in an ordinary structure, but were separate, each set upright in a silver socket. The curtains enclosing the court were suspended from pillars set in brazen sockets. The furniture also was so made that it would be easily transported from place to place on their journeys in the wilderness. The whole construction of the tabernacle, while beautiful and even gorgeous in design, showed its temporary nature. It was intended to serve only until such time as Israel should settle in the promised land and a more permanent building could be erected. The building was divided into two apartments, the first and larger one called the Holy, the second apartment, called the Most Holy. Before the first apartment hung a curtain, or veil, and another veil divided the holy from the most holy place. This latter veil was removed each year and another hung in its place. There were no windows in the building. In the first apartment, however, the lamps on the seven-branch candlestick, or lampstand, gave sufficient light for the priests to perform the daily service which the ritual demanded. The two apartments. There were three articles of furniture in the first apartment, the table of showbread, the golden candlestick, and the altar of incense. Entering the apartment from the front of the building, which faced east, one would see near the opposite end of the room the altar of incense. To the right would be the table of showbread, and to the left the candlestick. On the table would be arranged in two piles the 12 cakes of the showbread, together with the incense and the flagons for the drink offering. On it would also be the dishes, spoons, and bowls used in the daily service. The candlestick was made of pure gold. It had six branches, three branches on each side of the center one. The bowls containing the oil were made after the fashion of almonds. Not only was the candlestick made of gold, but also the snuffers and the snuff dishes. The most important article of furniture in this apartment was the altar of incense. It was about 36 inches in height, and its top was 18 inches square. This altar was overlaid with pure gold, and around its top was a crown, or molding, of gold. It was on this altar that the priest in the daily service placed the coals of fire taken from the altar of burnt offering and the incense. As he put the incense on the coals on the altar, the smoke would ascend, and as the veil between the holy and the most holy did not extend to the top of the building, the incense filled not only the holy place but also the most holy. In this way the altar of incense, although located in the first apartment, served the second apartment also. For this reason it was put before the veil that is by the ark of the testimony, before the mercy scat that is over the testimony, where God was to meet with his people. In the second apartment, the most holy, there was only one piece of furniture, the ark. This ark was made in the form of a chest, about 45 inches long and 27 inches wide. The cover of this chest was called the mercy scat. Around the top of the mercy scat was a crown, or molding, of gold, the same as on the altar of incense. In this chest Moses placed the Ten Commandments, written on two tables of stone with God's own finger. For a time, at least, the ark also contained the golden pot that had the manna, and Aaron's rod that budded. On the mercy scat were two cherubim of gold, of beaten work, one cherub on one end and the other cherub on the other. Of these cherubim it is said that they shall stretch forth their wings on high, covering the mercy seat with their wings, and there faces shall look one to another, toward the mercy seat shall the faces of the cherubims be. Here God would commune with his people. To Moses he said, There I will meet with thee, and I will commune with thee from above the mercy scat, from between the two cherubims which are upon the ark of the testimony, of all things which I will give thee in commandment unto the children of Israel. In the court, outside in the court, immediately in front of the door of the tabernacle, was a laver, a large basin containing water. This laver was made of brass from the mirrors which the women had contributed for this purpose. At this laver the priests were to bathe their hands and feet before entering the tabernacle or beginning their service. In the court was also the altar of burnt offering, which had a most important part to serve in all sacrificial offerings. This altar was about 5 feet high and 7.5 feet square, hollow inside and overlaid with brass. On this altar the animals were placed when offered as burnt sacrifice. Here also the fat was consumed and the required part of the meal offering placed. At the four corners of the altar were horn-like projections. In certain sacrificial offerings the blood was placed on these horns or sprinkled on the altar. The blood not otherwise used was poured out at the base of the altar. Solomon's Temple. When Solomon began to reign, the old tabernacle was in a dilapidated condition. It was several hundred years old and had been exposed to wind and weather for that long time. David had purposed to build the Lord a house, but had been told that because he was a man of blood he would not be permitted to do so. His son was to do the building. The temple which Solomon erected was built of stone made ready before it was brought thither, so that there was neither hammer nor axe nor any tool of iron heard in the house, while it was in building. The building. The temple proper was about 30 feet wide by 90 feet long. At the front entrance, which faced east, was a porch some 30 feet long by 15 feet wide. Around the other three sides of the temple, tiers of chambers were built, some of which were used as sleeping rooms for the priests and Levites officiating in the temple, and others as storerooms for money and other dedicated gifts. The temple was lined inside with cedar overlaid with gold and engraved with figures of cherubim, palms, and open flowers. Of this is stated, So Solomon built the house, and finished it. And Li built the walls of the house within with boards of cedar, both the floor of the house, and the walls of the ceiling, and he covered them on the inside with wood, and covered the floor of the house with planks of fir. The original tabernacle had no floor, but in the temple Solomon built both the floor and the walls with boards of cedar. Li even built them for it within, even for the oracle, even for the most holy place, after having covered all the inside of the temple with cedar so that there was no stone seen. Solomon overlaid the house within with pure gold, and he made a partition by the chains of gold before the oracle, and Li overlaid it with gold. And the whole house he overlaid with gold, until he had finished all the house. The oracle. In the oracle, or the most holy place, the ark of the covenant of the Lord was placed. The original ark had two cherubim made of pure gold. Now, however, two more cherubim were added and set on the floor, and between these the ark was placed. They were made of olive wood, each about 15 feet high. Both the cherubims were of one measure and one size. They stretched forth the wings of the cherubims, so that the wing of one touched the one wall, and the wing of the other touched the other wall, and their wings touched one another in the midst of the house. This would give the two cherubim a combined wingspread of about 30 feet. These cherubim were also overlaid with gold, and on all the walls of the house round about were carved figures of cherubim and palm trees and flowers within and without. Even the floor was overlaid with gold. In the first apartment of the temple some changes were made in the furniture. Before the oracle, and mentioned as belonging to it, stood the altar of incense the same as in the tabernacle. Instead of one candlestick, or lampstand, there were now 10, 5 placed on one side and 5 on the other. These lampstands were of pure gold, as were also the bowls, the snuffers, the basins, the spoons, and the censers. Instead of one table containing the show bread, there were 10. 5 on the right side, and 5 on the left. The altar and the laver. The altar of burnt offering, or the brazen altar as it is called, was considerably enlarged in Solomon's temple. The old tabernacle altar was about 7.5 feet square, while Solomon's altar was 30 feet square and 15 feet high. The pots, shovels, flesh hooks, and basins used for the service of the altar were all of brass. In the sanctuary there had been a laver for bathing purposes. This was now much enlarged. It was a basin of bronze, 15 feet in diameter, 7.5 feet high, with a capacity of nearly 20,000 gallons of water, and was called the Molten Sea. The bronze of which it was made was a hand's breadth in thickness. The brim was wrought like the brim of a cup with flowers of lilies. The whole sea rested upon 12 oxen, 3 looking toward the north, and 3 looking toward the west, and 3 looking toward the south, and 3 looking toward the east, and the sea was set above upon them, and all their hinder parts were inward. It was placed in the court between the altar of burnt offering and the sanctuary. Besides this large sea there were 10 smaller lavers placed upon wheels so that they could be moved about from place to place as they were needed. These lavers each contained about 400 gallons of water, and were used for washing those parts of the animals which were to be burned upon the altar of burnt offering. Each of these lavers was put on a base of brass. The wheels were like the work of a chariot wheel. Their axle trees, and their naves, and their fellows, and their spokes, were all molten. The sides were ornamented with figures of lions, oxen, cherubim, and palm trees, with certain additions made of thin work. The court must have been considerably larger than the court of the old tabernacle. The splendor of Solomon's temple can be seen from the spoil which Nebuchadnezzar took from Jerusalem. An enumeration in Ezra gives 30 chargers of gold, 1,000 chargers of silver, 9 and 20 knives, 30 basins of gold, silver basins of a second sort 410, and other vessels 1,000. All the vessels of gold and of silver were 5,400. The altar of incense. An interesting statement is found in concerning the altar of incense. The preceding verses describe the oracle, or the most holy. The ark containing the 10 commandments is mentioned as being there, and in connection with this, the altar which was of cedar. This altar, verse 22 states, belonged to the oracle. This may have some bearing on the question raised by the wording of the 9th chapter of Hebrews, where the altar of incense is omitted in the description of the furniture in the first apartment, and a censer is mentioned as being in the second apartment. The American Revised Version has altar of incense instead of censer, though the marginal reading retains censer. Whatever may be thought of this disputed reading, it is noteworthy that omits the altar of incense in the description of the holy place. The reading in that the altar of incense, while located in the holy place, belonged to the most holy, is generally considered the correct rendering. We therefore understand the statement to be that the altar of incense was located before the veil in the holy place, before the mercy seat, but that its use was such that it in a certain use belonged to the most holy. As it is a fact that incense filled the most holy as well as the holy ace, this seems, on the whole, the best view of the matter. Zerubbabel's temple. The temple built by Solomon was destroyed in the invasions of Nebuchadnezzar in the 6th century BC. Rulers and people had gradually departed from the Lord and gone further and further into idolatry and sin. Despite all that God could do to correct evils, Israel persisted in apostasy. God sent his prophets to them with warnings and entreaties. But they mocked the messengers of God, and despised his words, and misused his prophets, until the wrath of the Lord arose against his people, till there was no remedy. Therefore he brought unto them the king of the Chaldees, who slew their young men with the sword in the house of their sanctuary, and had no compassion upon young man or maiden, old man, or him that stooped for age. He gave them all into his hand. In this destruction of Jerusalem, Nebuchadnezzar burnt the house of God, break down the wall of Jerusalem, and burnt all the palaces thereof with fire, and destroyed all the goodly vessels thereof. Them that had escaped from the sword carried he away to Babylon, where they were servants to him and his sons until the reign of the kingdom of Persia. Thus began what is called the 70-year captivity, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed her Sabbaths, for as long as she lay desolate she kept Sabbath, to fulfill 70 years. The temple rebuilt. When the days of captivity were fulfilled, permission was given Israel to return. But by that time many had been in Babylon so long that they preferred to stay. However, a remnant returned, and in due time the foundation of a new temple was laid. And all the people shouted with a great shout, when they praised the Lord, because the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid. However, it was not all joy, for many of the priests and Levites and chief of the Israelites, who were ancient men that had seen the first house, when the foundation of this house was laid before their eyes, wept with a loud voice, and many shouted aloud for joy. so that the people could not discern the noise of the shout of joy from the noise of the weeping of the people, for the people shouted with a loud shout, and the noise was heard afar off. The temple thus built was called Zerubbabel's temple, after the name of the leader in the work. Not much is known concerning its structure, but it is supposed to have followed the lines of Solomon's temple. There was no ark in the Most Holy. That had disappeared at the time of Nebuchadnezzar's invasion. Tradition states that holy men took the ark and secreted it in the mountains to save it from falling into profane hands. In any event, the most holy place was vacant except for a stone, which served as a substitute for the ark on the Day of Atonement. This temple continued in use until near the time when Christ appeared. Then Herod's temple took its place. Herod's temple. Herod became king in 37 BC. One of the first things he did was to build a fortress, Antonia, north of the temple grounds, and connected with the temple court by an underground passage. A few years later he decided to rebuild the temple on a grander scale than ever before. The Jews were distrustful of him, and would not let him proceed with the building until he had proved his good faith by collecting the material necessary for the structure before any of the old was taken down. This he willingly did. The priests also insisted that no common person should work on the temple, and that it would be necessary for the priests themselves to erect the temple structure. Because of this demand, some years were spent in training 1,000 priests to be masons and carpenters to work on the sanctuary. They did all the work connected with the two apartments of the temple. Altogether, 10,000 skilled workmen were employed in the course of construction. Building operations began about 20 BC. The temple proper was finished in a year and a half, but it took 8 more years to complete the court and the cloisters. The temple at the time of Christ had been 46 years in building. In fact, it was not until about AD 66, just before the destruction of Jerusalem by the Romans, that the temple was completely finished. A beautiful structure. Herod's temple was a most beautiful structure. It was built of white marble covered with plates of gold, set on an eminence with steps leading up to it from every direction, constituting a series of terraces. It rose to a height of 400 feet above the valley below, and could be seen from a great distance. Josephus likens it to a snow-covered mountain. It was a thing of beauty, especially when seen from the Mount of Olives in the morning as the sun shone upon it. It was one of the wonders of the world. Herod's temple was the same size as Solomon's temple. That is, the building proper was about 90 feet in length by 30 in width. The holy place was separated from the most holy by a partition about 1.5 feet in thickness, with an opening before which hung the veil, which was rent at the death of Jesus. There was no furniture in the most holy place, but only the stone WT over from Zerubbabel's temple, upon which the high priest placed his censer on the Day of Atonement. The furniture in the holy place was probably the same as in Solomon's temple. Directly above the holy and the most holy were chambers or halls where the priests met on stated occasions. The Sanhedrin also met there for a time. In the end of the room above the most holy were trap doors through which a cage could be let down into the most holy place below. This cage was large enough to hold one or more of the workmen who at times were needed repair the temple. The cage was open only toward wall, so that the workmen could work on the walls out stepping out of the cage, or, in fact, without touching anything but that part of the wall on which we're working. As only the high priest could enter most holy place, this plan provided for making sacred repairs without having the workmen enter, or in the most holy place as such. On the sides of the temple proper were rooms for storage purposes, the same as in Solomon's temple. There was also a porch in front ending 36 feet beyond each side of the length, making the total length of the porch about 160 feet. In the court. The outside court in Herod's temple was a large closure, not entirely square, about 1,000 feet each way. T1 Lee's court was divided into smaller courts, such as the court of the Gentiles, the court of the women, and the court of the priests. In one part of the court, on an immense trellis, or grill, rested a golden vine, of which the bunches of grapes, according to Josephus, who, however, cannot always be trusted, were the height of a man. According to him, the vine extended about 40 feet north to south, and its top was more than 100 feet from the ground. Here Herod also placed a colossal golden eagle, much to the distress and displeasure of the Jews. He was at last compelled to remove the eagle from the sacred precincts. About 33 feet in front of the porch of the temple stood the altar of burnt offering. This altar was larger than the one in Solomon's temple. According to the Mishnah, it was 48 feet square. It was built of unhewn stones and was about 15 feet high. An incline, also built of stone, led up to within a few feet of the top of the altar. Around the altar, near the top, was a walk on which the priests stood administering the prescribed sacrifices. In the pavement near the altar were rings to which sacrificial animals could be tied. There were also tables containing vessels, knives, and bowls used in the sacrificing. The altar was connected with a kind of sewage system, so the blood poured out at the foot of the altar was carried into the stream below. Everything was kept scrupulously clean, even the sewage system being washed out at stated times. Inside the walls surrounding the court were porticos, or cloisters, also called porches. The one on the east side was called Solomon's Porch. The north, west, and east sides had double porticos with two rows of columns, and a roof of carved cedar. On the south side was the royal porch with 162 columns. These columns were so arranged as to form three aisles, the two outer ones being each 30 feet wide, the middle one 45. In these porches, public meetings could be held. It was here the early church gathered when they went to the temple to pray. It was the usual meeting place of Israel whenever they went to the temple. The part of the court nearest its entrance was called the court of the Gentiles. A stone parapet separated this court from the rest of the enclosure. No Gentile might go beyond its confines. On the parapet was the inscription, "No stranger is to enter within the balustrade and embankment around the sacred place. Whoever is caught will be answerable for his death which will ensue." It was because the Jews thought Paul had transgressed this temple ordinance that he was seized and arrested by the Romans. An 1881 plaque was found bearing this dot inscription, and is now in a museum. Herod's temple was one of the most beautiful structures the world has ever seen. It was the pride of the Jews. Yet the time came when it was destroyed. "There shall not be left here one stone upon another, that shall not be thrown down," were the words of Christ. This prophecy was literally fulfilled. Not one stone was left. The original sanctuary and the three temples here mentioned had certain things in common, though they differed in some details. They all had two apartments, the holy and the most holy. All had an altar of incense, an altar of burnt offering, a laver, a table of show bread, and a candlestick. The first two had an ark, which disappeared about 600 BC. The priesthood was the same throughout, as were also the sacrificial offerings. For more than 1,000 years Israel gathered about the sanctuary. What a blessing might have come to them had they discerned in their sacrifices the one promised in the Garden of Eden, the Lamb that takes away the sin of the world. Let us fear lest the promise being left us we likewise should seem to come short of it.